Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello, good evening, good afternoon, good day. I don't know where you are, whoever's listening to the program, because people from around the world are always checking in, and we have a very, very interesting subject this evening. My guest is Britt East, and his book is A Gay Man's Guide to Life, How to Get Real, Stand Tall, and Take Your Place. Yes, those words are very empowering, and his book is an amazing read. Britt East, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Britt, this was quite an accomplishment for you to do. You are a man that has gone through many, many different experiences. You are a speaker. You've been in front of many different groups regarding the gay community. But this book, I think, you know, what commonly would be called a straight person, I think anybody could benefit from this, because what you have given in this book, I think, could empower just about anyone if they were able to read it with an understanding that you are about enabling individuals that feel like they might be outcast, that they don't have to be an outcast. What was it, Britt, that made you decide that you were just going to sit down and focus on this? Because so many people are so uncomfortable with the topic of the gay community.
Thank you so much. That's so kind of you to say. You know, I did a subtle thing with the naming of the book. I did not call it A Guide to Life for Gay Men. I called it A Gay Man's Guide to Life, meaning I wrote it through the lens of my lived experience as a gay man. But the concepts, the knowledge, the insights, and the wisdom that I present are universal, just like you say. It's really time-honored kitchen table wisdom that you might have gotten, you know, at the kitchen table from your grandmother. But in our case, as queer people, we often lost contact with our grandmother. We often grew up without the rites of passage and initiations and ceremonies that that so many straight people take for granted, that confer adulthood on young people, that welcome them into the larger community. And without that, many gay people experience a prolonged, unhappy adolescence. And so I wrote this book as a wake-up call to gay men in particular, but to anyone who needs it, because we're essential. Queer people are essential, not just in the queer community, but in the community at large. And like you said in the subtitle, I want us to start learning how to sharpen our elbows and carve out a place for ourselves, to stand tall and take up space.
Well, I think that this is very important. As far as I'm concerned, people are people. It's the character of the individual that makes a difference to me. And that's just me. And as far back as I can remember, that pretty much has been my attitude. And I'm not saying that I haven't been discerning or discriminating about who I associate with. That's very true. But it just really is something that I have never been able to grasp, how there will be these segmented demeanors and attitudes without justification. And this, to me, is so important, what you have put together. You make a statement in your preface that in order to be empowered, we must own our truths, hold our journey, acknowledge our harms, atone, amend, and then move on. Good Lord, I think that would go for just about anybody.
Amen to that. You know, it all starts with our stories. That's how we first get empowered. We must reclaim our past, our truths. we must go back and excavate the truth of who we were always meant to be. And like you said, that's work for all of us. But in the queer community, it's especially important because we have been papered over in an attempt to eradicate us. Straight people for generations have tried to deny our existence, to act as if we weren't there. So it's incumbent upon us to learn how to write our own stories.
I think that is significant, because when you empower yourself on a personal basis, then you're able to walk with your head high.
Exactly.
But, you know, this is cross-cultural. This is not something where it's just a little bit of something in American history. But, I mean, it's been in Native American history. I've done interviews on that. I mean, there's in the Middle East. It's in the Middle East. It's in China. It is in Africa. So it is fascinating to me how some cultures historically have been okay with it. But the other cultures maybe have not been, or it's had to be in some kind of a guise. And I find the more that I read about human history, the more fascinating it is, because it's like, again, in some spaces, everything's okay. In other spaces, it's not. And in the Western world, there has been a lot of hypocrisy about this on so many levels. And they'll say, no, it doesn't exist, and that's a big lie. It does exist. It always has existed.
Yes, exactly. Whether it's same-sex attraction or behavior or the actual plurality of sexual orientations and expressions, we have always been here, and we will always be here. We occur randomly in every population. You cannot eradicate us, try as you might. And if you could, you already would have, because it's all been done to us before, and still here we are. I lay so much of it at the feet of colonialism. And I love this thread, because the first thing I encourage queer people to do everywhere is to learn our shared history, mm-hmm. to understand that we stand on the shoulders of giants like James Baldwin and Bayard Rustin and Oscar Wilde and Angela Davis and Kimberly Crenshaw, and you name it. We stand on the shoulders of giants. We think we're alone when we're little children, because in many cases we grow up in straight families. And even the most well-meaning straight families, generally speaking, have little clue how to raise culturally gay children. So as we develop, as we grow and find our agency and create our sense of self, it's so important we look back before us and reclaim our shared history, because it has direct implications for our culture today.
Yes, I think it does. Now, fortunately, there's more conversation or an openness of conversation than there has at all. But you said in your own family that you, and I'll quote directly from your book, you said, your family was like something out of Faulkner. They suffered without wisdom, steeped in denial, and immersed in cycles of intergenerational trauma, addiction, abuse, suicide. And you said, it's a myth that all parents love their children, just something we like to tell ourselves. A little lie helps us keep things as they are, validates our own choices and inadequacies, and smooths and soothes our base instincts. The intergenerational traumas with your family, can you go into that a little bit? Because I think that's important to be aware of, because you have traveled a long journey in dealing with this and coming into your own power, if you will.
Yeah, it's wholly separate from the homophobia I experienced at my family and society at large. I also had a heaping of just good old-fashioned child abuse. And part of that abuse was the secrets that we submerged ourselves in our family, that so much was left unsaid. And, you know, looking at the harm that I experienced, the mind reels at what my parents and their parents and their parents' parents would likely to have also experienced. And inadvertently, some of those stories have trickled down to me, and they're outlandish and horrible. But the sum effect was that as a child, I had a deep sense that I was utterly alone, that I was a pariah, that there was no adult coming to save me, no benevolent witness to be had, that any life I had to build, I would have to build with my own two hands. And so that's what I did. And I set upon that course, and because I was completely immersed in all of this harm, I did just about everything wrong. And until one day, my life was utterly destroyed. And through that destruction, through the grace of that forest fire experience that I lived through, I had the opportunity to meet my true self, to get in recovery, in my case, in the 12-step program, to meet myself in the eyes of others and experience the thrill of togetherness and finally create the life that I was always meant to lead.
Now, one of your beginning steps to your own appreciation of who you were as an individual, as a person, was learning to take care of yourself physically. And of course, that's a huge topic of conversation. And you really made it a point as you went along in your own personal progress of making sure that you had individuals that you could use as mentors, that you could use as counselors, because you found that you, just by yourself, you weren't going to cut it. You had to have that empathetic aspect of communication that would give you the feedback you needed, and your physical wellness went a long way to helping you start on your path to being who you were. Am I correct?
Absolutely. I was smart enough, through some grace, to be keenly aware of my own foolishness, and that I, like you said, I could not do it alone. If I could have, I would have. I really wanted to kind of slink through the shadows of life, but I was an abject failure. But through some series of miracles, I found all sorts of subject matter experts who could shepherd me along. Now, I was very fortunate and privileged. These were, in many cases, dollar-driven relationships with talk therapists and life coaches and things like that. But not in every case. The 12-step program is free, and there were other modalities I explored that were very inexpensive or free. But the point was, I immersed myself in their knowledge and submitted to the process.
Mm-hmm. I really liked one section in your book, and it was about having honesty with the self, really being able to not make up stuff. For example, and this was related to being overweight or smoking too much or, you know, whatever it is. And you said, we need to pay attention to what we do. We really have to have integrity with that. And you said, when we tell ourselves little lies, it binds many of us to a life we no longer recognize, and it's out of sync with our true purpose. I really appreciated the questions that you pose that people can ask themselves. Does your thinking reflect your highest integrity? Do your words reflect your highest integrity? Do your actions reflect your highest integrity? How might you bring more of your truest self to all of your interactions? These are very powerful questions. If you really look at them and say, first of all, what is integrity to me? I mean, these questions are great. But lots of times people do not know really what integrity means to them.
Exactly. And the basis of this method of inquiry was the 12 steps for me. The fourth step in that program is taking a fearless moral inventory. And I just decided at some point, okay, behind closed doors, can I at least start by being honest with myself? If I'm too shy or embarrassed or my dignity can't afford to admit it publicly at this point, can I at least just behind closed doors start to get real, start to peel back some of these masks that I've been hiding behind my entire life? That's when I first noticed the thrill of togetherness that I was speaking about earlier. When I allowed people to see me and I met myself in their eyes, I experienced the delight and wonder that naturally occurs when two souls meet and they see each other for who they truly are, not just the roles that we play.
Mm-hmm. You also make a comment that scientifically is very definitely approved and realized, and they're expanding on it even to a greater degree. You said you needed to rewrite your story in order to build new neurological connections in your brain and to recontextualize everything you thought you knew about yourself. Wow. I mean, that is huge. To be able to take that something from the past, as unpleasant as yours was, to take that and say, wait a minute, how can I use this so it's going to serve me instead of destroying me? Now, I'm paraphrasing my own thoughts here, but I thought that was a very powerful statement.
Thank you. You're right on with your paraphrasing. I love it. And, you know, from what I understand in science, this is called neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was first in talk therapy, the diagnosis that I received was one that therapists thought was insurmountable. It was an attachment disorder, which would basically mean that some parts of my brain were missing because of the trauma I experienced, and I would never really know love. But today, that has been thoroughly debunked. Today, we know that the brain has the capacity to heal itself, particularly when people are joined emotionally and spiritually and soulfully through benevolent witness through the process of sharing their story. That's the experience in which we are healed. And so in that process, we, like you said, we actually start to recontextualize all those events that we had framed a certain way. We start to see them in a whole new light. And as we are loved and joined in that experience, we've actually literally at a neurological level experienced healing.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible. And it is something that in neurological programming, that this has been, NLP is a process, and there are some other processes that you can use. And when you're able to do that, it's phenomenal. It's mm-hmm. absolutely phenomenal, because you're able to take off your blinders, I think it's wonderful. And I delighted when you said in your book, A Gay Man's Guide to Life, like I said, just about anybody could benefit from this. Boredom pushes us forward to reach for the world, to learn, grow, and play. Now, someone listening to the word boredom all by itself would say, oh my God, I'm so bored. You have no idea. This COVID has been driving me nuts.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely insane. Well, the truth is, without boredom, you're not going to move. Well, maybe some people are like couch potatoes. They'll never move anyway. But the boredom aspect is, it's like, I've got to do something. I can't sit here forever. This is absolutely awful. So maybe you get up off the couch, you go out for a walk, you meet a stranger, you talk to somebody, or you decide you're going to cook something in the kitchen you've never done before, because all you've got is lettuce leaves and rice left. So you say, well, I better come up with something new. So, you know, you've got these different things that come into play. Boredom is very significant in life. And yet it seems like we have got to run from it. And we don't realize how it can serve us very, very well.
Right. We've made a fetish of our own pleasure and preoccupation, when it turns out boredom is really the root of all creativity. It sounds so paradoxical or like contradictory, but it's actually, we need that space. There's a gap that occurs between stimulus and response. And that gap in this case is boredom. We need time to be still and blank so that we can tap into the universal consciousness. And through that process, we become the hollow reed of creation, whatever form that creation takes, like you said, whether it is cooking or writing or exercise or art, whatever form, whatever the moment requires is funneled through that hollow reed, which is tethered to the universal consciousness.
I chuckle to myself when you're saying the universal consciousness, because one of your sentence in one of your chapters, the very first sentence is, I am an atheist. And I just chuckled when you were saying what you were saying, because the universal consciousness is all there. And in my view, you're just using another term for what I would say is the God presence. Yeah. And that's okay to me. I don't care. It's wonderful. And I just smile because we human beings seem to have a patterning of wanting to use labels. And those labels produce boxes. And those boxes can be little itsy-bitsy little nano boxes, or they can be monstrous Empire State Building or Mars special size. And you look at these things that we get stuck in. Without realizing, sometimes we're saying the very same thing. We're just using different semantics.
Exactly. I completely agree. And one of the things I wanted to do in that chapter on spirituality was to bypass any potential defense mechanisms a queer audience might have that are based in their past religious trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And that trauma is very real. And I wanted to show them that they could, that we can have a spirituality independent of any sort of hierarchical organization. And so I call that atheism, but you could call it anything. You call it secular humanism. You could call it the universe. You could call it God. Whatever you want to call it is largely irrelevant. Like you said, that's just semantics. It's the association with the word that's important, not so much the word itself. But I wanted to bypass those defense mechanisms and get right to the point and engage that reader who maybe had suffered that harm and show them you can have vibrant spiritual practice no matter where you've been or who you are or what you've done.
Absolutely true. And the awareness that you're never truly alone when you become aware of that is powerful. It just is absolutely powerful. You have not only the chapter on spirituality, I really appreciated your very practical, realistic communication because too often we get caught up in what I call the Hollywoodism of whatever Fantasyland is going to be having a special on this week. And it is very important that we realize, number one, life is not fair. Number two, we're going to have to work at whatever we want to achieve. Sorry, folks, but that's the way my textbook reads. And three, enjoy diversity. Enjoy all of the variables that present life to us, realizing, yes, there can be schmucks that come along in our lives. Everybody's got to experience a few of those to realize how much the good stuff is. And then You need to be able to keep yourself in balance and in center. And one of your chapters is on career. And I loved your story about your career. How you really didn't know squat. You had gone to college. You got your fine arts degree. And I laughed when you said, by some incredible stroke, and I'm quoting directly from your book of luck, I happened to be living in Seattle during the dot-com boom at the turn of the century when anyone with a pulse could get a job. Really? That was actually going on here? And a pulse was just about all you had going for you. I laughed at that. I said, oh, my Lord, this is hysterical. And that somebody took a chance on you. You didn't know what you were doing when you were hired?
Oh, yeah, I remember it like it was yesterday. I mean, I am the most overeducated fool you will ever meet.
And I
went in there with my, you know, master's in flute performance and my fancy resume with, you know, what I thought were no relevant job skills. I've since learned otherwise. And I went in there kind of praying that I could get hired for anything. And my very first job was as a receptionist. I was placed through a temp agency, and I had gotten a recommendation from a previous employer at a university that I was teaching at. And that I think was really the only reason I got a job, and they probably just needed a warm body, frankly. But it was my foot in the door, and I sat down in that chair and I thought to myself, okay, I can do this. I can do this maybe for the next 20 years and it's going to be just fine. Well, it turns out because of all the soft skills I had cultivated through the discipline of practicing classical music and getting up on the world stages and performing in front of tons and tons of people all over the world, I could do a presentation. I could write a position statement. I wasn't afraid of speaking truth. I knew how to present things in a way that were non-confrontational and annoying, yet provocative and thoughtful. And I didn't know this at the time. I witnessed it again in the eyes of others as I just went about the course of my day. And I just got promotion after promotion. And what I came to learn is that all those things that I perceived to be my greatest weaknesses as a potential employee and a job candidate were actually my superpowers.
That is something. Like I said, yeah. I absolutely adored it. Bigotry. I've experienced bigotry. I have experienced discrimination. And I've known, there are so many people I've known, whether they have been a person of color from, you know, a different country, couldn't speak English very well. I mean, we all are going to experience this at some time or another. And you experienced it, and you go into detail when it comes to career regarding the bigotry that can be in corporate environments, which is very, very real. There have been some changes with that, and it's taken a long time for some of those changes to evolve, but they're still there. You're still dealing with human beings, and most of it is ignorance. Most of it is just downright total ignorance. And what I liked is you said, please don't take it personally. Don't panic. Apply for jobs for which you are unqualified and make it okay. Just practice confidence, dignity, and patience. My goodness, why don't they teach that in college?
Exactly. Yeah. I could have used some of that real-world advice in school growing up. It would have saved me a lot of time and heartache, but you're exactly right.
Those soft skills, in fact, today are what many companies want.
Exactly. Even medical schools or law schools, you know, I think that started to change maybe when I was in college in the 90s, and that was started, you know, they would specifically look for med students who were not biology majors, and that kind of became in vogue. But it's actually come to a really wonderful place now from a certain perspective, in that these soft skills are actually celebrated and actually highly sought after. So if you are a fine arts major, take heart. All these things that your parents are worried about and making your friends are making fun of you for, they're actually your superpowers. They are your competitive advantage differentiators. And if you learn how to tell your story effectively and apply them effectively, they will help you stand out from the crowd.
Absolutely true. You say the most efficient way to be cruel to ourselves is to compare ourselves to others. Oh, my goodness. Boy, I've been down that road more than once. And I don't know of anybody else that is would be honest enough to admit it, but it's true. I think that's a very natural thing that human beings do. When you're children, you're looking at older people, and whether, you know, depending on the environment you're in, you think that that's it. And it isn't it. And the process, you know, when you're a child, you don't have very much in the way of filters. So you're a sponge and you're just absorbing everything. And then you've got to go around the process. That's why I hated the teenage years. Oh, God, did I hate teenage years. You went through those awful years where most of the time nobody understands teenagers anyway, because they didn't understand their own teenage years. So just to survive to get to adulthood, which in our world is supposedly 18 to 21, and most of us, if we reach that point of maturity in that time frame, boy, are we lucky. But the thing is, today, usually they don't reach it until they're 30 to 32. Now, that's not too good a statement. But here we are. And then to go through the process to really find out who we are. And this is what your story is about. And this is what your book is about, A Gay Man's Guide to Life. Because your world and your perceptions are very much colored by whatever it is you encounter, just like it is in the, you know, straight person's life. It's,
absolutely.
You know, we're not any different in that respect, yet we are different. But that's okay.
Absolutely.
That's not a bad thing. It's just that being aware of that, and you go in, you have a very good section on relationships, codependency, all kinds of things that you talk about that I think anyone could, and I mean this most sincerely, anyone would benefit from this.
Oh, thank you.
So your book, A Gay Man's Guide to Life, is very real. Mm. And I think that having this available, let's say, to people in high school or even in college, where there could be open discussions like this, I think that this makes you realize people are just people.
That's right.
And that's the key. What is it going to take for us to be able to recognize that the gay person's environment is really not all that different from the straight person's environment? And when we can look at people as human beings, then we are going to find there's going to be a much different environment other than fear and anger and hate, which should not be there.
Exactly.
Well, Brett East, I think you have done a very fine job with this book. And Getting Real, Standing Tall, Taking One's Place, I think that is something we all need to respect about someone else's right to do, and also to do it for ourselves. So I really think you've done a wonderful job with this publication. Now, people can go to your website, Brett, and that's Brett East, and that's BrettEast.com. What are they going to find there?
All sorts of free content, like articles that I published and previously and linked to, all sorts of social media posts, and I have a blog. They'll also find a link where a page where I've consolidated all the online stores where they can purchase the book. It's really the hub for all my work, the easiest way to find me.
Well, Brett East, I wish you nothing but the best of success, and I know that your book will make a difference in people's lives, and I think that's a significant accomplishment. Thank you for being my guest.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a joy. Donna Sebo here, and we are going to be taking a break. And by the way, I am in studio. Give me a call if you'd like to chat. 253-582-5597 is the studio number. So we are going to be coming back in just a moment. And oh, I've got so many different things to share with you. Don't go away. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to Mrs. Sebo's Classics.com. This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. Well, we've got a wonderful guest, Jacqueline Stewart, who has been on my show before. Jacqueline is a historian, and she has a series. In fact, there's 4 books in her series called Hidden Women. And we're going to be talking about Bordeaux, France, and this is about Celtic women in France. The European history on the Celtic people is just amazing. So she's going to be with me tomorrow, and then we're going to be talking with Dr. Fortoraro. I finally got her name right. I don't know why. To me, it was just a tongue twister. Well, this delightful lady has put out a publication saying, God came to my garage sale. It is absolutely marvelous. She is in St. Croix, the island in the Virgin Islands, and we are just going to have a delightful conversation. Also, we're going to be talking about The Audacity to Be Divine by Judith Halbrick, and it is about a very special person that she knew quite well, healing childhood trauma with Robin Marvel. My goodness. We just have so many interesting people, and what do you know, in March we have got a powerhouse of a lineup already scheduled. But on Warriors for Peace, now remember, Wednesdays are a doubleheader. That's right, from 7 to 8 p.m. every Wednesday before the Donna Sebo Show comes on with Warriors for Peace. We're going to be talking with Dr. Mark Schellinger, and it is about a young man's weekend. And this is about dealing with teenage sons. And there are so many families that just don't know what to do. Well, Dr. Mark is what is called a teen whisperer. His story is an amazing one, and he's been engaged in working with teenage boys from different environments for 15 years, and we're going to find out what he has learned and the difference that it has made for families as well as for these young men. Remember, when they enter puberty, they're no longer children, they're young adults. And that is a perception that our society started changing in the 1930s. The word teenager didn't really start coming about until then. And when you look at previous generations, by the time you entered your young teens, you were to handle responsibilities in life. And I can tell you many stories about many people that have shared their stories of how they had to raise their own siblings or take care of things because the mother abandoned the family or the father abandoned the family or the family was busy out working and the kids had to take care of each other and themselves. I mean, it really is amazing how we seemingly have gone to the opposite extreme of not wanting young people to really grow up. And as a member of my family used to say, childhood is a time when you prepare the children to evolve into adulthood. You don't wait until they're 18 to do it. So anyway, this is going to be a fascinating period that we've got here, and I'm so delighted that we're able to share it. Remember to like us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And also know that the programming is heard through Alexa, iTunes, iHeartRadio. My goodness, just go to my website. You'll find out about all the different modalities that you can hear the programming through. And don't forget that you can get the archives. If you miss a show, they're in the archives, and you can listen to the latest 13 to 15 hours of programming when you go to my show page. So just Google Donna Sebo, and you'll find that the link is right there at your fingertips. 253-582-5597 is the telephone number to call into. And I have a bunch of little odds and ends of things that I wanted to share with you this evening. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we had a whopping 2.5 days of snow, and then what was left of the Arctic front has ended up going into rainstorms, which is RMO anyway. The blue skies of Seattle don't occur until maybe June, July, and August, and the rest of the time, if by grace, we have a lot of rain. I like to call it liquid gold. Well, that creates a lot of dampness. And I came across some information. I thought, wow, I never knew I could do something with laundry lint that could help me during the winter. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. When it comes to building a fire in the fireplace, dependent on your chimney and dependent on whether you have a wood stove or if you're like me, you have an insert, a fireplace insert. Well, because of the dampness, it often can come down through the fireplace itself. The dampness will go in. And you will say, well, I'm having a tough time getting the fire started. Well, maybe you were in Scouts and maybe you weren't. And maybe you, if you're like us, the log pile ends up getting rained on so your wood is damp. How are you going to get a fire started? Well, maybe you don't have newspaper. Well, this is a tip. Take the lint from your dryer, stuff it into empty toilet paper tubes. Yeah, they're like little logs. Put them under your grate, light them, and they'll burn long enough to ignite your wood. Amazing. Now, you can go to the store and buy fire starters, but if you have dryers, which almost everybody does in their home, whoever considered that? I didn't. I thought that tip was really, really interesting. I know of one gal, any lint from her dryer, she would save it. In fact, she had a guy come in and clean her dryer all the time. She would save it and then put it out for the birds so the birds could have something to put in their nests. Well, that's one application, but you're going to have to wait till spring. But this allows you to have something that's a fire starter, very inexpensive. I think it's a great idea. And then there is something else here. You can speed listen to a podcast. Well, if you're like so many people, you're so busy, you really don't want to take a lot of time to listen to podcasts. If you are like me, you'll say, oh my goodness, I have so much time. I don't have enough hours in the day. Well, you have got apps with the podcast, and I didn't realize this. You can speed up the audio without distorting the pitch or the quality. Did you know you could do that? You can. And I was not aware there's a 1.8x speed that is a good place to start, and you could get through a 30-minute broadcast in less than 17 minutes, and yet it's all articulate. You can also use the app Overcast, which has a smart speed setting that automatically compresses podcasts by cutting out pauses and silences. And if you're listening to informational podcasts, which I guess my show in many respects could be put in that classification, then you got it. You're going to be able to get it. And you can also, you know, have it available for yourself. So I just thought I'd share a couple of those things. And then there's one last item that really caught my eye. And that was about taking a nap. And I'll share with you why this was so significant to me. They said that the military, especially the U.S. Army, wants soldiers to know how to take short, infrequent naps to restore wakefulness and promote performance. Now, this came out of their field manual, FM 722, the Holistic Health and Fitness. And it says, stick to a consistent sleep schedule. Well, let me tell you, soldiers on duty, they don't have a consistent sleep schedule. I mean, it's very inconsistent. And if you are in an area where there's a lot of activity going on, believe me, you don't get sleep. But they said they should try sleeping in and napping to pay down sleep debt rather than sticking to their usual sleep-wake schedules on off days. Let me tell you what I learned a number of years ago. I was performing in an event, and this was in California, and I happened to have a Marine corporal, I believe it was, who sat down with me, and we were talking, and he had met with me to get a reading, because this is a person that had no doubts about mind skills because he had seen it in combat and there had been a lot of things that had happened to him personally. But he told me something that stuck with me. He was a Marine. He was in active combat frequently. Early on, he trained himself to take naps. And typically, he said they were about 12-minute naps, because when you were engaged in combat in different environments, you were sleep deprived frequently. And he learned how to do this, and he trained himself so that he could nod off for 12 minutes. He said bombs could be going on around him, but he would go into this altered state of sleep. 12 minutes later, bingo, he was awake. But he was refreshed. He was not groggy. He had trained himself to do that. Actors, actresses that have heavy working schedules, years ago, they used to use slant boards. Those were boards that they would lay down on, even if they were in costume. They would lay down on the board. One end was elevated 6 inches above the ground. You can make your own slant board. Stores used to carry them, from what I understand, but obviously they don't today. But you can make your own. They would elevate their feet, lay there 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. They would be refreshed. They could continue their working schedule. They learned how to do this so that they could continue to perform. These are little tricks that I learned about years ago. And this is something that really works if you pay attention to it. And if you're afraid you're not going to wake up, but if you set a little timer, you can get them at the dollar store or whatever, that just have a little beep, or maybe you've got a rooster call, like one of my friends with their timer. That's the one thing that gets them up in the day when they need to get up. They're a night person. So whatever it is that you use, you'll automatically wake up. And eventually you can train yourself, just like that Marine taught me so many years ago. And I share it with you so that you can utilize it too. It's fascinating what the human mind is capable of doing and how we can actually refresh ourselves by doing that. It's the same thing with sitting, just closing your eyes. You know, put yourself in a quiet space where you're not going to be disturbed. Allow yourself to relax, release, and then you can be about the business of the day, whatever it is. I used to do that when I was working certain hours because I was just exhausted. And I would take my lunch hour and I would do that. But anyway, I wanted to share that information with you because so many things cross my desk from so many different sources. And I just think it's good to share. You never know how it is going to serve you. It really is amazing. Well, we know today, and by the way, if you want to give me a buzz, 253-582-5597. All I need is your first name or your initial, and I'll be happy to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 253-582-5597. Well, there was a teacher by the name of Julia Cook, and we know how, with this COVID situation, the schools closed and they were going in for the virtual classes and all kinds of things are going on. It was just absolutely and still is a madhouse relative to this environment. However, there was this woman, Julia Cook. Now, it was only her second year. She was teaching first grade in a virtual classroom in Michigan. And last September, she received a call from Cynthia, a woman that was really trying to help her granddaughter because they were having technical difficulties with the computer. That is not unusual. And when she was talking to Cynthia, she knew something was very, very wrong. Now, these two women had communicated before. They had been online because this is what the teachers were doing. And she said something was not right. Now, you're dealing with a first grade student and a grandmother. And Cynthia said that the grandmother was jumbling her words. And she was able to discern that Cynthia had actually fallen four times that day before they had come online to work with the children. And what the teacher did, she called the principal as soon as she got offline, said something's very, very wrong. This little girl is at home with her grandmother. Something serious is happening here. She's going to need some help. And he went himself, the principal did, to, one, call her and find out what was going on. Now, she answered the phone, but just like the teacher Cynthia had said, he couldn't understand her. And he said, okay. He said she may have already had a stroke. So he was able to recognize certain patterns because his own father had gone through this kind of a scenario. So he heard her say something about kids, and it made him think, oh my goodness, there's more than one child that's in the house. We've got to call 911. And that's what they did. And an ambulance went to the home, and there were a couple of other people in the teaching community that ended up actually going to the family's home. This was a community that they said, we've got to check on this lady because there's multiple children here. She needs help. And the ambulance drivers, the EMTs, were treating the grandmother, and there were two little girls that were just terribly, terribly frightened. And the people that had come from the school were able to talk to them, make them more comfortable. And fortunately, because of this interaction with the teacher, then the grandmother got the medical help, and she got help in time so that she didn't have serious damage. She was going to be able to come out of the stroke situation. And the grandmother, Cynthia, she said, I am so grateful to all of these people. She had to stay in the hospital for a while, but she pretty much was able to regain all of her physical strength and stamina. There's a little bit of a leftover, and she's working on that with speech therapy. But she said, this community of people really cared. And there were neighbors that worked with the children, and you know, there was a local Boys and Girls Club, that's a club that came in to play. And there are so many things that came out of this because people said, let's see what we can do to help. So there was this wonderful, wonderful communication. Now, this is a situation where the virtual learning really was a blessing because there was communication going on. If this woman had been home by herself, the girls were in school, nobody would have been there. So it really was a life-altering situation. And you know what? It shows how important communication is, not to isolate oneself. And I think this is such a powerful statement, such a powerful story. And look at the wonderful blessings that went out all the way around, people being able to help, people knowing that they are making a difference because they're stepping up to the need at the moment. I think it's just absolutely wonderful. Donna Sebo here, 253-582-5597. I came across some real weird stuff. You know me, I have all kinds of interests here with the show. Do you know that animals have often been considered criminals? Now, I'm not talking about the elephants raiding the cornfields in Africa. I am talking about some of our ancestors, which, as far as I'm concerned, it made me wonder, were they that brain dead? Anyway, this is true. Centuries ago, animals were put on trial for crimes ranging from witchcraft to theft to murder. And do you know the animal that has been most persecuted in these trials? The magnificent pig, one of the most intelligent animals on this planet. And this occurred especially in the 1500s in France. There was a mother pig and her six babies that were sentenced to death for killing and eating a child. And the sow was executed, but the piglets were pardoned because it was felt they were led astray by the bad example of their mother. Really? Oh. And then the only known criminal hanging of an elephant. You won't believe where it took place. It didn't take place in Africa. Mm-mm. It took place in Irwin, Tennessee on September 13, 1916. The convict's name was Five Ton Mary, and she had killed a keeper. I wonder what the keeper did to her. Of course, elephants were kept in horrible conditions back then in the early 1900s, and the treatment of animals just was awful. But in 1963, the courts of Tripoli sentenced 75 convicted banknote smugglers to death at one time. 75. They were all pigeons. I'm not making this up. This is real stuff, folks. Ah, yes. Who would ever believe it? But it is the truth. I'm telling you, we human beings do some really weird stuff to often cover up what we don't want to be seen. And the last but not least situation for the evening occurred in 1998 in Clearwater Beach, Florida. Yes. And this is what happened. According to a publication that was called Weird US, more than one person spotted a humongous penguin. This penguin was waddling down the beach. Remember, it's Clearwater Beach in Florida. Apparently, the bird was 15 feet tall and left giant web tracks in the sand. And boaters that were in that area also reported that they had seen a huge penguin-like bird floating in the water. And then there was someone who was a pilot that said they had seen a creature of a similar description on the banks of the Suwannee River. Don't you just love it? Nature has a way of always putting something up that we go, where did that come from? I didn't know they could get that big. Well, I think what has absolutely been amazing to me are the pythons that they find in areas like in the areas of Asia. And they are so long. I'm trying to think of one that was 30, 40 feet long. I mean, this had to have lived for a very long time. And there were all of these people that had found this python, and they were holding it up, and there had to have been about 12 to 15 men holding this python up. Amazing. Just absolutely amazing. So nature does do some interesting things that we don't expect. Donna Sebo here, 253-582-5597. Now, I know that we're just about out of time for the evening. And don't forget, tomorrow night, we are going to be traveling to Europe. Yes, we're going to be looking a little bit about history there. But you know what? Tea is something that I absolutely depend upon. And there are so many different teas and flavors that we can get. But one of my favorite mixtures that I find, especially during the winter months, it's absolutely invigorating, is black tea with ginger, freshly grated ginger. And if you have a sore throat, and I learned this from one of my guests, if you have a sore throat, you could just take a tiny slice of ginger and suck on it like you would a lozenge, and it soothes the throat. You won't have a sore throat after a while. Well, I like to start my morning off frequently during the winter with ginger tea. You don't have to add sugar. The ginger gives the black tea a wonderful, wonderful taste, but it's great for the digestion. It has polyphenols in it. I mean, this is good stuff. This really is good stuff. And depending on how big a teapot you've got, and I have a big teapot, then you just use as many bags as necessary. But you can use sugar or honey, whatever you like. I like it plain. And it actually is very refreshing and a wonderful way to start the day. Well, I will say goodnight for this evening's show, and I hope you will join me tomorrow. And I look forward to sharing more good things with you. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And also remember the good old-fashioned golden rule, treat people as you would like to be treated. This is something that goes across all cultures, and it really is worth learning. Because so many times we have attitudes about things, and we don't realize they came from someone else. They're not really ours. Remember, you have dominion over your space. God bless. Be well. We'll be talking again soon. Bye for now. We'll be right back.
been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.